Keaton here for the Casthetic Podcast. I want to remind you to please use the Amazon banner link at the top of our website at casthetic.com for all of your online shopping needs. It costs you nothing extra, and the show gets a percentage of all the sales. Please bookmark it. And now, on to the show. Welcome to another episode of Casthetic. I am here with the band named after the Lady of Twilight, the Daedric Prince Azura, are joining me today, and they got a wonderful song for you, so let's go on this journey of fine adventures and companions and schoolyard fights with their song Dreamscape.
I can only blame myself. Explore the dreamscape, ignore the mind rape. I don't seem to be finding new God. But what does she do when she's in the dreamscape? I still see that face, and a sense of loss in a holocaust, longing to be free. There's no escape for me.
Welcome back. So now let's get to know this delightful band straight out of the Elder Scrolls universe. Let's go around and introduce everyone, tell them what you play, your name if you feel like, or a fake name. Doesn't matter.
All right, my name is Max Nichols. I sing and play the guitar.
My name is Dylan Jones. That's really my name, and I play guitar.
My name is Trevor Peshtemalgin. Don't have to worry about remembering the last name. I play the drums.
I'm Nick Thorpe. I play the bass guitar.
Now, you guys are prog as heck. Who would you guys say are probably some of your big prog influences?
I'll jump in. For me, it's like Opeth, Porcupine Tree, Tool, and then like the older ones like Rush or Yes, for me personally.
Mm-hmm. I'm also a big Dream Theater fan. They're my favorite band.
Yeah, for me, Trevor, it's probably Tesseract and Tool are my top. Because I'm not too into prog, but those were definitely the easiest to get into for me.
Yeah. Oh, it's my turn now. Yeah, pretty much everything everyone else said I listened to. So,
how did you guys form up? What's the history behind Azura?
It's a long story.
Yeah, we'll give it the debrief version. Nick and I were in a band together, so we like knew about each other, and that band broke up, and we went off and did our own things for like a year or so, and we just sort of ran into each other a while later and thought, hey, why don't we do this? And that's the like most nonspecific version of like how this band came to be.
Yeah, I was after the band with Dylan broke up, I got into a classic rock band with Trevor as the drummer. And that sort of ran its course in a few months, and it kind of turned into a country band with a girl singing. And me and Trevor just kind of stuck together through classic rock and country bands. And around like after we'd been doing that for several months, I got really discontent with playing country because obviously that's not something I'm really into. And then we were playing a gig and saw Dylan there, and that's we started talking about it and talking about prog and stuff like that. And by then, you know, Trevor had the chops to play all the stuff that me and Dylan liked. So, you know, just kind of that discussion kind of started it.
Yeah, and then we kind of brought in Max. I mean, I wouldn't say brought in because he's still a original member for sure. But we had been together for like maybe two or three practices, and we're like, we should get some vocals.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. Who would sing with us? And got Max. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of complicated parts in your guys' music. I'm wondering what it takes for you guys to flesh out a song and what your songwriting process is like.
It varies a little bit depending on, you know, what we're doing. I think that when we're doing the really complicated stuff, Nick writes a lot of that at home. Some of these complicated stuff we would just come up with in practice, and we would just scat entire sections. Like, I think right here we could use like a right there, and like we would do it that way. But a lot of it Nick would come up with, and then like a portion of it would also be done at practice like that. Usually we would just come in, one of us would have an idea, you know, like a small idea, and we would just see how many places we could take it, really.
Pretty painful process.
Yeah.
A lot of the times one of us is just laying on the floor crying.
Yeah.
That's a true statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some good photos of at least one of us sleeping at any given
Yeah, we just kind of, usually one of us comes in with one idea and we just kind of run with it and becomes a 10-minute song.
Yeah.
You know, we're real big on transitions. We always try to emphasize going from one sort of theme to the next, and that's kind of what follows the changes in the songs a lot.
Let's move on to this segment we have on the show called Five Questions. I'm going to ask you five questions I ask everyone. Cue the music. It's Five Questions. First one, what is your worst gig?
Worst gig together or worst gig separately?
Together.
Maybe the beginning of the Grog.
Would it be Grog and Tankard?
Yeah, it'd have to be the Grog show.
It has to be the Grog show.
The Grog and Tankard. Who wants to tell that story?
I can do it.
Yeah.
Grog and Tankard show, we were played a place called the Grog and Tankard, and we were scheduled to play with two other bands.
It's two other bands.
Two other bands, and neither one of them showed up. And so it was just us and the like few, it was like a far, it was like a 2 hour, or like an hour and a half drive to get there.
Yep.
It was just us and the few people that we were like friends of ours that we were able to get to drive an hour and a half. And Amir from Oberis, and that was the whole show. We played our entire like hour and 15 minutes worth of material for our friends and Amir.
Butchered the intro.
Oh yeah, and we got started on our first song and just stopped.
About 30 seconds in, it got so bad that we had to just stop and start over.
But it was okay because we had two people there who weren't band members, family members, good friends.
Yeah, I was really excited for that because one of the bands was from Pennsylvania. Called Illustrium, and they were a fairly, you know, they're a pretty established band. They have several thousand likes on Facebook, and I know some of the guys in the band, and they just, it turned out like they had just found out like an hour before they had left that the guy wasn't going to pay them. So, and they're from Pennsylvania, obviously, driving all the way down here. So they just, they just bailed on it right there. So we were supposed to be playing a show with a fairly popular band, and it ended up just being us for an hour and a half with our biggest fan, Amir, just standing there right in front of us, like, us up, enjoying
gave
every
it a good
moment
vibe.
Of it.
Yeah. There was a fog machine. Yeah.
Honestly,
so.
I'm glad he's there. He was great guy for staying through that whole show.
Yeah, looking back, it's one of my favorite and least favorite gigs, because it is like really silly, just like that. Just that mental image of Amir just like with his phone out, like taking videos and stuff. Like, hey, good stuff, guys.
All right. The worst equipment malfunction you had during a show.
I've had a lot.
I think for me, mine wouldn't be at an Azura show because I've been lucky enough or prepared enough to not have any like bad equipment malfunctions at Azura shows. But I remember I did play a show where it was with School of Rock, so we like would perform like other people's songs, and I remember playing an Iron Maiden song, and I got a solo in it, and I stepped on my cable. This is before I knew to wrap my cable, and I stepped on my cable right before the solo, and I started playing. I'm like, where am I? And I looked down, and I had unplugged myself. So that would probably have to be my worst one at a show that I can remember, at least.
Yeah, I've had quite a history of just horrible malfunctions in like pretty much any scenario. Before, I guess it was on my 14th birthday, my whole family caught wind of the fact that I played the bass guitar, and they were like, oh, well, let's hear you. And I was like, all right. So I went downstairs where I had all my bass stuff and, you know, got it and plugged in. And like, as I was walking over to my amp, I just stepped on it and snapped the jack, like right there. Cable's gone. Bass is gone. Bass input jack was just like mauled. It was just a bad scene there, and I was like, that was my favorite bass, so I was like disappointed too. So then I had to give like an unenthusiastic rendition of like a Christmas song for my family. It was a bad time, but I don't even know if I'd call that a gig.
Mine always happens just whenever I come to use my wah pedal. It always just disconnects for some reason, and usually I don't figure that out until like a couple minutes later, and I'm just like, oh, I haven't been playing anything this whole time.
Woo! Yeah, that's why Max has switched to using my wah pedal now.
Very true.
Mine's probably just boom cymbal collapsing on the toms. That happened just recently when we were in Roanoke.
Oh, yeah.
Someone in the crowd came up and, yeah, fixed it for me.
But, crowd roadies.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta love
God bless them.
Yeah. All right. Now, the dirtiest or scariest place you've stayed during a tour?
Well, after all of our extensive touring we've done. I guess me and Max get to say Super 8, but yeah, that wasn't dirty or anything. So, let me say the Super 8 in Daleville, Virginia is very clean, and I would suggest anyone stay at it if they're in the neighborhood.
Definitely a discount for us next time we're down there.
So yeah,
Super 8 bump.
Yeah. I don't know if I've stayed at any like. Really nasty.
It was probably the dirtiest venue, though.
Yeah.
Can't even remember.
It was like in a hallway. Like
it was Backstreet Cafe.
We're playing in the West Wing hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad time.
It was a tranny bar.
It was a pretty well-run place altogether, I thought. But it was very hole in the wall.
Very inviting.
Yeah.
The closest you've come to quitting music.
Every day.
Now, watching other drummers for me. Yeah. Other drummers, that's extremely broad, but like, you know, great Marco Miniman, Thomas Pridgen, just some of my favorite drummers, and just being like, wow, like, yeah. Got some work to do. I mean, it's humbling and inspiring, but got time too, because most of them are not 18, they're 30, 20, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, like, I don't remember much of the context of this, but I think when I was like 10 or 11, like one day I just decided I was mad and I was like, I was going to stop. And I, like, I had, like, a Van Halen tab book, and I remember I, like, ripped it and, like, threw it in the trash. I was like, fuck guitar, man. Like, I'm done. and I, like, picked it up the next day, and I was like, oh, maybe I can play it again. But I think that, I don't know, maybe that was the closest. I've stuck with it for a while, I think. But I did have one day where I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm bowing out. I'm retiring.
I've reached the top at 10.
Yeah, yeah. I had like looked at the eruption tab, and I was like, that's it. I did it.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't think of any times I specifically got really close to just kind of throwing in the towel, because really, I mean, ever since I started actually playing the bass guitar, it's been like pretty much the biggest part of my life since I picked it up. But probably the closest I've come to quitting temporarily was the first time I heard Dream Theater, because I had spent my whole bass playing career trying to emulate Steve Harris from Iron Maiden, and I finally kind of got there to where, you know, I play like exactly like Steve. I was playing Maiden albums cover to cover every day and stuff, and then my friend showed me Dream Theater, and that was just kind of a, you know, when you think that you're like as good as it gets, and then you realize that on a scale of 1 to 10 you're like a 3. It's a pretty hard pill to swallow, you know. I don't think I played for like a week or two after that. I was just kind of like, man, I don't know if I can get back in this or not.
I've never really had a point where I actually like quit. Really early on in the stages, I got like really lazy and stopped playing. But now, I mean, I don't know. This is pretty much all I do, so I can't give it up at this point. So that's out of the equation. Yeah.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
All right. The last question: what is your best memory together as a band?
Jeez.
Like, to qualify something as the most band-ish moment, I would say was the Roanoke thing.
Yeah, the Roanoke definitely the Roanoke thing was like pretty cool.
The overnight,
the after party, yeah, and all that.
Yeah, that was the first time doing that.
I would say one of my fondest memories, I guess this is pre-Max, but one of my fondest memories is like the first day we tried to play Fish together, and like Nick was like facing away from us, like staring at his amp, and like me and Trevor were like locked in eye contact, like trying to figure out how to play our own songs.
Yeah, we thought it'd be a good idea to write a part where I was playing in 7-4 and they were playing in 4-4, so I just had to like not focus on what they were doing to play it, and it was a train wreck.
I would say that it's just like it's just like a myriad of like really silly moments that have built up like over a year and a half or so. Yeah. I don't know if we've had, we might think of one like as soon as this is over, but like, I don't know if I can think of like one, like the defining Azura moment.
Any dumb quotes I've well, had.
Trevor,
you've had a lot of dumb quotes.
I'm learning how to ride horses.
Yeah.
No homo.
Yeah.
Well, hilarious band moments aside, I think my favorite was probably, the Charlottesville gig where, we got to, you know, it was my old bass teacher teaches music at a school down there, and he offered us to just go down there and knock out the whole, everything we had written, the whole album cover to cover, and we went down there and played it, and really just playing the last note, and, you know, looking back on what I guess is like 80-some minutes of music that we had written, you know, it felt really fulfilling to know that, you know, you just played 80-some minutes of music that you sat there and watched it grow into that over several months. It was very fulfilling. A lot of companionship, you know.
Yeah.
It was a really good feeling, rewarding moment.
Yeah. That's true. I think looking back on that show, it's really cool. That was like, we did it, sort of. In terms of just in writing the stuff, it's like we did it, we performed it, like we actually just like came up with it. Like it was a lot of fun. Especially, I mean, we had like years of, or at least I've had like years of failed bands prior to this one. And it was really cool to like actually have like a gratifying moment on stage. So I think that, yeah, Nick's got a good one there.
Well, let's get on some more music. The next song you guys have is called Romulus. I'm assuming from the ancient tale of Romulus and Remus and the wolf titties.
Yeah, and it sounded cool.
Yeah, it sounded cool.
There are a lot of things in this band that were named or done just because they sounded cool.
Well, that's the most important thing when naming it. It's got to sound cool.
That's what the band name came from. Nick knew the word and was like, that sounds cool.
So. Here it is for all you listeners out there. It's Romulus by Azura. Thank you. I hope you guys enjoyed Romulus. Now, is there a really cool story behind this song? Because there aren't many lyrics. Actually, there aren't any lyrics in this song to give any hint.
Well, I mean, the motivation for writing it came from two things. One, I just wanted to have something. I always like the idea of having a song that's just comically difficult that we all just kind of use as a warm-up. Like, when I wrote it, I had no intention of it actually being an album track. I wanted it to just be a song that, you know, we jam beginning of practice to get in the groove of things, and we'd make it really difficult for that purpose. And also, I was kind of gunning for Dream Theater on that because they have a song with like 120 sometime signature changes, and I was shooting to one up that, and I think we hit 186.
Yep, yeah, somewhere around there
is the exact number. So it was a combination of both of those things. But besides that, you know, it was really just write a song, make it sound good.
Now, you guys are recording an album currently, correct? Where are you recording and with who?
We will be recording an album in about a month or so. I think we're going to start. That's going to be at C1 Studios in Herndon, Virginia. And then as far as mixing, we're not entirely sure. We may have them mix it. I have a good friend up at Berkeley who may be mixing it too. We're kind of leaving that open right now.
I'm looking forward to hearing 180 time signature changes in an album. Do you guys have any shows coming up?
None as of right now. We're always booking. You know, we tend to book shows on fairly short notice. You know, a lot of times they're just like, hey, we have a band opening. We're like, we'll do it. You know, just drive like 4 hours to play 30 minutes.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, we don't have any that we can promote right now, but I guess if we were to promote something, it'd just be the Facebook page. Look Azura up on Facebook and we'll announce all the shows and stuff there.
Now, say someone wants to contact you to book a show. What's a good way of doing that?
We have a Facebook page that we get a lot of messages on, and also we have an email. I think it's azurabandofficial@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Official.
I'm actually going to look at it right now and just make sure that's what it is.
In order to separate ourselves from all of the other Azura bands.
Yeah.
You know that we were the official one. All the parody accounts that are out for us right now.
There's one with an H and we don't have an H.
Yeah, we don't have an H.
We don't associate with those people.
All right, well, I got a few shows to tell you guys about coming up. First off, I want to explain the importance of open mics. Go to them. Check people out. Just have a good time. Socialize. Listen to music. A good one to check out is at Epicure every Monday night and Thursday night. Awesome open mics. And then we got a few shows coming up. On April 2nd, Murphy's Law, Acne, and Copstabber are playing at The Pinch with a lot of other guests. Then May 13th, Better Homes, Taylor George, Moreland Beard, Out on the Weekend, and Siren Axe. I'm sorry if you're listening, I mispronounced that. I'll do better next time. Are playing at Valley Cat in Winchester.
I probably will go to that. I love Better Homes.
Better Homes are great.
They're great.
July 16th is the Cataclysmic Bacon Fest the 3rd down at Art Mart. That's hosted by Dr. Yu, if you're familiar with his work.
Oh, I know Dr. Yu.
And then July 21st through July 24th, down in Newcastle, Virginia, the great, the mighty, the Untitled Fest is happening. 3 days, three hot, hot days, camping, listening to music, and hugging people in ways that sometimes they don't appreciate. But ask permission first. That's going on. You can get your tickets online at untitledmusicfest.com once they announce the tickets. They haven't announced the lineup yet, but it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, we may be on Untitled Fest.
Yep.
I'm uncertain, but
We'll figure it out.
There's a chance we'll be there. Yeah.
There's a good chance. If not, just come. Just come anyways. Yeah.
That's true. We'll probably be hanging out there.
There's almost a 100% chance we'll be there, whether or not we're playing.
So we got one more song for all of you listening out there. And this song doesn't have a name, so I'm not going to come up with some kind of clever ending to this show to incorporate the name. But I know it's the second part to a three-part song. Is there anything you guys want to say about it?
The song is a full-on story, so you guys are going to be getting the middle part of the story. So if the lyrics don't make sense, it's okay.
You're going to be lost in the plot. All the more reason to go to one of their shows and get the full story. Yeah. I'm Keaton Buse from Cassathetic. Big thanks to Mark Ryder and Ken Barnum for recording, mixing, and like casting spells to affect global change. Big thanks to Bias Studios for allowing us to record in their lovely facilities. Here it is for you, the last song of the show. We'll be right back.
this tower of regret. I could have prevented this. Fearing something I haven't seen yet. Here, approaching now, the door seems